My name is Norma Jean Stroman, and the title of this session is The Story-Shaped Life, Telling Our Stories of Hurt and Hope and Healing. And this is the fifth in a series that I've been giving since the beginning of last week. Just to let those of you that are new here know that my work is as a grief support counselor and educator in a funeral home setting. So my work primarily consists of working one-to-one long-term with people who have been bereaved by the loss of a death by someone close to them. And I also lead Shalom groups, which I have pamphlets on here. And part of tonight's presentation will include a short video. It's a half hour long, but I'll only show a clip of it to deal with the issue of stories, telling our stories of hope and hurt and healing. One of my issues, one of my passions about this, in addition to working in the setting I work, is in the church. And I've even heard those conversations up here this week. People will say, you know, our church is real strong and we've got good preaching, we have Sunday school, and et cetera, but we really don't have groups for people to deal with the issues of their life, and death is one of them. And that's why I have a passion about this topic, is because I know that when I've gone through the losses earlier on in my life, and I saw my mother go through it, we were very much raised a strong church background, but the church wasn't there, you know what I mean? Very few people knew how to hang in long term. There was no grief support program in the church. And over again in my work with people, I hear the same story. So if you don't agree with this or you'd like to counter that, please say so. So one of my hopes is that people will feel maybe called to do this as a ministry of the priesthood of all believers, in the sense that I think the way I see it is, if the church isn't large enough to hire someone to do this as a staff position, or the staff people don't have that particular passion, then it's left to a lay member that has that commitment, or else it doesn't happen there. And also my conviction is that if we don't have groups that are set up for the purpose of telling our stories of hurt and hope and healing, it probably doesn't happen as well as it ought to. And by that I mean that, again, I've been raised in the church and have gone to many, many Bible studies and X number of groups, and if I've been in a time of grief when I really need to process that, the group Bible study leader, and I've been one myself, will say, well, thank you, but I think we need to move on now, or let's have somebody else have a turn. And so it doesn't get a chance to get processed. And I know we could talk about all kinds of different kinds of grief. I'm coming mainly from the perspective of grief through death. So on the board behind me, I just have a broad outline of some of the perspectives I'm coming from tonight. What is the reason for a story-shaped life? By the way, what my bottom line supposition behind all this is, we all have story-shaped lives, because we could all sit and tell many, many stories of our families, and our perspectives in our families. My sister and I were raised, you would think we were raised in different families. At some points. I was the oldest and she was the youngest, and we were only 7 years apart, and we had such different perspectives on the same event that you'd think that we maybe didn't have the same family. So what I mean by the story-shaped life is we all have a story-shaped life, but not all of us can talk about it. And even since I've been up here, which validates how I perceive this in my work setting too, is that several people have come to me after being in the session or whatever and said, could I talk to you? And when we get into their issues, very, very common is, I can't talk about this in my family. So sometimes family is the very hardest and most difficult place to talk about losses and groups. So what it is taking the chaos, this actually should probably be switched around, the chaos, the loss and grief we have, and giving it shape and form. And my conviction is that happens in community. And I'll get to that a little bit later. Over here, what I mean by chaos is that oftentimes in grief, we feel very isolated and alone. And so if you can bring that to speech in community, it has a chance of taking some form. Why should we be concerned about a story-shaped life? Well, the biggest reason, I think, is because of our incarnational faith, that God came to be with us in Jesus. So that gives us power for us to walk hand in hand together, and for us to be with others. But we have to get that empowerment, it seems to me, by telling our stories in community. And finally, how, and this will be leading into the final three sessions I'll be doing at the end of this week, So we'll just touch on this at the end of the session today, but I believe it's the small group model is the ideal within the parish setting I'm talking about now. And then retreat work, and then that leads into ongoing community. So that's kind of a framework from where I'm coming from. Anybody have any questions or confusions at this point they want to say, since this is small and informal? Okay, just chime in at any point that you'd like to with any comments you'd like to make. I've referred to Elie Wiesel's quote several times before in my sessions, and I'm going to say it again because it relates to everything on this topic. I think all of you probably know Elie Wiesel, the Pulitzer or the Nobel Prize Holocaust survivor. And one of his quotes in his first book, Night, he says, "I'll transmit my experience to you, and you in turn will be compelled to do the same. You in turn will become a messenger, and once a messenger, you have no alternative." And that relates to me to the story-shaped life, because our story shapes our life. And once we have had that event come into our life, we're no longer the same. We have a new message. And if you want to relate that, you could to the gospel, that's the message we've been given. Before I get into some other stuff, I've been reading from this book, Selected Readings. This is a wonderful book I was given by a friend called The Book of Qualities. And it personifies qualities into people. So I'd like to read three tonight that I haven't read in the other sessions, that I think have to do very much with community that comes as a result of a story-shaped life. They're liberation, perseverance, and truth. And I think what I understand about liberation theology, that small group around these kinds of issues is somewhat like liberation theology. What I know about that is people in Central America will get together and talk about their life. What is your experience like? And then they read the Bible. And then they say, now what is my life like in the light of this experience, in the light of this liberating truth? So I think it is in grief work, that it's called grief work because grief surfaces a whole bunch of issues you have to deal with in your life. And to persevere in a group setting in caring community, I believe, is to come to liberation and truth. So, liberation. Liberation tried to commit suicide when he was 17. Things got even worse before they got better. He was married to terror for nearly 10 years, and one day when he was wandering, famished and half crazy in the mountains, he bumped into ecstasy. Ecstasy wept to be reunited with his old friend and taught liberation a simple prayer. And after that, liberation was free to leave terror. And if you relate that to small group, over and over again, people in the group say that when they hear other people's stories, they are liberated from their own terror, is a little strong in this case, but from their own grief, just by hearing other people's stories. And then the quality of perseverance. Is there a school where perseverance teaches classes? I want to meet him face to face and see what he looks like. I've heard so much about him. It is not that I want his feedback. I am sure he would tell me to keep working, and I already know that. It's not just me either. Offhand, I can name at least three friends who are as curious as I am. One is a scholar, one is a writer, and the third is a young parent. I would write Perseverance a letter inviting him to come here and teach at the neighborhood school, but no one around here knows where he lives or how to find him. I read somewhere that they were trying to hire him to co-host a PBS series on the creative process, but he would have none of it. Says he is shy in front of cameras. Truth is, he turns down all offers which distract him from his work. And I relate that to grief work in the sense that it's the natural human inclination to stuff it or to try to get rid of it or to deny it or in any way not have to deal with it. But perseverance is to know where you need healing and to persevere, not works righteousness, but to go to a place where you know that you will find healing. And then truth. Truth is tall and rather unconventional looking. He has golden hair and a short beard. He does not like statistics and is not particularly concerned about facts, but he loves a good story. He chronicled the contemporary film scene for a while. He quit when his reviews started being quoted out of context. Though he never hides what he feels, by nature he is gentle and not at all sarcastic. However, he does have a fierce temper. He has observed that people who only listen with one ear when he says something in a kind way are always impressed with his anger. Okay. Just quickly then, I'd like to highlight a thought from Matthew Fox, who's one of my favorite authors. Some of you may have read his book, Original Blessing. And one of Matthew Fox's theories in Original Blessing is what he calls a theology of blessing. And I'm going to just highlight a few of his thoughts about that and how I think that relates to community, which is a gift of the story-shaped life. Fox says that all blessing involves relationship. We want to be blessed. We are in relationship in some way. And that leads to ecstasy, which is the experience of God. And that in relationship is the way people are most deeply transformed, which is central to our Christian faith, to the incarnation. We are transformed by the Christ event. And so I believe we are transformed in community around our issues. And that theology of blessing is really an act of creation. It's birthing something out of nothing that was there before. And the people that are on the video will testify to that. And that's one of the things I'm starting to do now is video people that have been in my groups to hear their reflections on what has come out of this creative process. And I really believe in that process. It's just almost magical. That act of creation, though, involves a lot of trust. And this is a very difficult thing to try to put into words, but one of Matthew Fox's themes is that birth coming out of darkness and chaos, it's very much like birthing a child. It's a 9-month or whatever long a period of time, gestation period. And sometimes now we're talking about grief, there's an enormous long period of silence and waiting. Sometimes when we want to, over and over again I hear that people want to speed up their grieving process. And it's just one of these natural processes of nature that it will take its own time. It's a time of openness and emptiness and darkness. And that's very antithetical to what we're thrust into the American culture. You know, you just watch commercials and everything should happen now. And so this is not easy. It's not an easy discipline, but it's an act of trust. It's a time of powerlessness and oftentimes having no words. But Fox says that if we listen long enough and are quiet and attentive long enough to what our soul is telling us and the images that we get, they will work for us and take us in a new direction. And I believe that's the process of what happens in community. Fox also talks about the two wines we drink out of. One is the wine of bliss, harmony, and ecstasy, and one is pain, suffering, and loss. In the next sections at the end of the week, I'm going to relate Elizabeth O'Connor's teaching to that. That another gift of community that I experience over and over and over in this kind of work is that very thing comes out of pain and loss, harmony and ecstasy. And I could tell you many stories of how the people in the groups are relating to each other in that kind of way. Fox says that pain is meant to give us energy. And again, I don't hear this proclaimed much in the church, certainly not in our society. We are everything in our society, commercials, fast foods, I mean, everything is to speed up life and to deny pain and take it away. And once we have entered into that process of our own pain, then we can understand others in their pain. And Fox relates that, he said, if we cover up pain, we will also be into covering up pleasure. It's the both and. It's the theme of Holden this summer, the contraries. Fox says the answer is to pray it, to enter into it, because that will bring the love of life back to us. And I think a lot of Peter Steinke's teaching this week confirmed those kinds of thoughts. The purpose of pain is to let it be pain so that you can let it go. I referred a couple sessions ago to the image of a beach ball, that if it's there in front of you, just let it be and attend to it and see where it'll take you. You know how much energy it takes to keep it under the water. And then it blasts out with force greater than it should have had somewhere else. Fox says that waiting is the only thing we can do, which is not easy in our culture. And this kind of sensitivity to pain demands an enormous amount of strength. And I say that we have to have it in support groups or at least one friend. Not everybody's a group person, I realize that. But the kind of strength it takes to walk through pain, very few of us can do by ourselves. And that's also very incarnational teaching. Any comments or thoughts on that so far? Or disagreements? Or
I like your statement. Pain is meant to give us energy. My father died 3 years ago, and my mother has been up here twice as a volunteer. but she has arthritis in her knees so bad that she can't do the hills anymore, so she's just now in Baltimore for a year with the Lutheran Volunteer Corps. And I hadn't thought of it as pain giving us energy, but I think that relates to her very well.
Thank you. Yes?
I would think that pain would take energy from you.
Pardon me?
I would think that pain would take energy from you.
It does. It does, but I think if you keep denying it, it will take all your energy from you. And I think when we're confronted with pain, we basically have two choices. You know, am I going to name it and get it on the table and look at it for what it is and then seek my healing, or have other people encounter me, like the woman at the well story we talked about. But I think the end result of pain is energy one way or the other. Sorry, I can't hear you.
You mean you can come out positive?
Yes, I definitely believe that. That's why I'm doing the kind of work I'm doing, because in my own autobiographical story, mysteriously, the only way I can explain it is because of the cross, that in the act of death and resurrection comes new life. And if spirituality and your belief system is not a part of your healing, I really don't know where people go with it. But I work with enough people and I hear enough stories where I think if you don't have a belief system to support the life journey, we can see all kinds of ways we cover up. We cover up with addictions, with getting into relationships that are not healthy, suicide, grandiosity, all kinds of behaviors that psychologists talk about that are really denial systems for what's hurting inside of us. So what I'm trying to say that I think Fox is saying here is that the alternative to that is to name it and to get it out and talk about it in whatever way, with one other person that can help you into your healing, or a group, or whatever, the way the spirit works.
Do you mean that most people don't understand what's causing them pain?
I think a lot of people don't. I've talked to so many people and studies, et cetera, that I think it's very difficult. I think the journey of life is very difficult. And I think a lot of people don't understand it, yes.
And there's also people who hang on to their pain.
Yes.
Sort of nurture it.
Right, yes.
And don't move on.
Yes, and Fox says that the purpose of pain and naming it is not to fondle it and hang on to it and keep it in a sickness with yourself, but to let go of it. It's the beach ball. You know, if you see it, then here it is. There it is, a great big colored beach ball. And let's name this for what it is, and then it will go away. Then it will take different forms and be transformed.
Well, what it boils down to then is, how do you let it go?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you let it go? It's a big question. Yeah.
And how do you name it if you don't know what it's about? It's just a feeling.
Right. That's another big question. How do you name your pain? Anybody want to respond to that?
Well, sometimes you just can't identify. You just know you're not yourself, mm-hmm. and you're not what you want to be. That's not the person you were last month or last year, but mm-hmm. now you're somebody different.
Mm-hmm.
You say, I didn't have anything to do with this. What did this to me?
Mm-hmm.
I just went through a divorce, and that was how mine was. I didn't know what thing that was attacking me all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you just...
I think there are many forms for discovering and naming your pain. I remember my first teacher that spoke that in a way that I'd never heard it before. It was like hearing the gospel for the first time was Walter Brueggemann, who is I don't know if you've read his books or heard his teachings, but he has an enormous gift of language and just named my reality, and I won't begin to try to tell you how that happened. But I believe very much that the Spirit of God works in our lives in a myriad of ways to help us get to that naming of pain. And the bottom line I would say about that is that we really are not meant to do it alone, that it takes companions on the journey. And after that, it's all of our stories as to how we come to that point. You want to say any more about that, how naming your pain? Any more specific question?
No.
I have experienced it most powerfully in community, and that's what the theme of this of my sessions are, is over and over again. We had a video of one of the women two sessions ago who said that when she came into the group, and she was scared to come into the group because she'd been divorced, and then her father died right away, and she immediately stuffed it and continued to stuff it for 10 years. And it wasn't until this last Christmas, she was standing at a Christmas party in my hometown, and actually it was my boss that happened to walk over to her and put his arm around her and he said, "How are you?" And she just said, burst into tears, and she says, "I'm just terrible." And she realized then that she'd been prompted by a friend, her neighbor who was in this group in particular, and she thought, she knew she was finally brave enough to start to look at it. So I think sometimes we can walk for years with unresolved pain and not know what it is, and then at a kairos time in our life, it comes around. And she said that her naming of her own pain is helped in the group process, because she will sit there with her particular story, and then there are seven other people in the group, each of whom have come for a different reason. And I believe that our own story is transformed by another story. In the grief groups that I lead, they happen to be open to anyone who has lost someone through death in whatever situation. So there's a couple, for instance, in her group that had their daughter committed suicide in March. There's a woman who they were just going into retirement and her husband died, so she's like 65 and has just lost her husband. A young woman, 35, whose brother was killed. A young woman who's lost an infant. So all these different stories. And what happens to us, this is just a little digression on naming your pain, is that whatever our particular situation is, we tend to get so engulfed in that, we think that no one else could possibly have as much pain as we do. But then when you're in community and you start hearing it from other people's story, then your own pain is transformed into a different perspective. You start getting a name for your own pain. That would just be one answer. Yes?
We refer mostly to pain caused by death or divorce, loss. What about other types of pain?
Do I deal with that, did you say?
Or do you feel it can be dealt with in a similar way?
Other kinds of pain?
Yeah.
Yes, I definitely think so. I mean, just take people who, the big thing now is dysfunctional families and alcoholic systems and the tremendous pain of missed opportunities, communication, all those kinds of things. Chronic illness, mental illness, you know, grief that never ends. I mean, any kind of pain, I believe, is one of the images I have for that is like a fraction, and pain is the common denominator, and on top of the top of the fraction, the numerator, is your particular situation. And I just happen to have a real strong conviction that in the church, we ought to be able to be community to one another. That's one of my agendas and one of my passions behind all this, is that when my brother and my father both died of cancer early in my 20s, and we grew up in a very, very strong church background, I guess I saw a few people hang in there for a little while with my mom after being left after all that, but not really. Most people go on. There wasn't a group. And so that was the root of my passion for this issue, and I think is why I'm finding myself in this kind of work. After many other kinds of grief in my family, which was loss of my father's job, a tremendous amount of insecurity over all kinds of things. Am I speaking to your question at all? Yes.
Along that same line, do you then feel that it's pretty important to have a group that speaks pretty specifically to whatever that type of loss is, so that persons who are experiencing physical pain or a disability would then look for a group?
I think on one level that would be definitely desirable, like she's saying, a specific group for your specific loss. Okay, all kinds of support groups. And on the other hand, I also believe in the power of community that can come from just a committed group of people that come together in small, caring groups in a church, and they are there for the purpose of just exploring their life journey together, whatever it is. And Elizabeth O'Connor, do some of you read her writings, Church of Our Savior? This is her thing. She leads small groups, and her thing is that the church is small group commitment, and I really believe that. And my own experience, my most powerful experience of community I ever had was our former town. We lived in Wissous Falls, South Dakota, and five of us women happened to get together because two of us were in a conversation one day about women in transition. And out of that, we realized we had some mutual interests, and so the five of us got together and decided, well, let's explore some issues together. And we met every Saturday for 2 years for breakfast for 2 hours. And that radicalized my notion of community. And it's serendipity because it's, on one hand, I don't think we could have planned that group and said, no, let's get a group of five women together and discuss such and such an issue. You know, I'm not sure it would have gone as well. But what I'm answering your question by saying that What I learned in that group was we did not come together over loss through death or over any particular grief issue or anything else. We just came together to be in community. And it was powerful. Those women are still my spiritual sisters, and I think I'll have energy from that group the rest of my life. So that I think a small study group can be formed, a small anything, mixed ages, it can be anything. I think that's better because people from different age groups have much more perspective on life. Am I speaking to your question?
Yes, but in addition, then coming from the same experience, mm-hmm. though, it seems to me would be pretty pretty critical in certain
mm-hmm. in certain areas. I think it definitely.
I guess
is.
I'm thinking in terms of pain because we have yes. a family member who's had a pain circumstance
right.
and became addicted because of that. Mm-hmm. And I as an attempt to hide that because
yes.
there's no place to really go
right.
and have anyone.
Yes.
I think pain clinics teach individuals to
yeah.
live with pain, but they
right.
don't really get much beyond
yes.
Denying it.
Yes.
That's actually what it's about. And instead of naming it and bringing it
exactly.
out and looking at it, and
yeah.
then what? It's
yeah.
just difficult.
Well, then I think, as one of my Catholic sister friends taught me, then you're into issues of deeper healing. I mean, it's not like we ever get rid of it. The image I've been working with this week is this of a circle, this being our relationships. And in my original family, there are two huge gaps with the death of my brother and my father. And now, when I talk to my children about my family, they're still there. They're just patches and mended spaces. Those people didn't go away. They're still very much part of my life. So, when I think you come together over similar issues, I think that there is a real important place for that. And I would like to, for some of you who haven't been to this session before, unfortunately the bookstore ran out of this book, but this is a book I would highly recommend to anybody that wants to do a study group in a parish. I found it out here last year at Holden, and I've used it in my grief groups in the funeral home setting. It's called Helping People Through Grief When a Friend Needs You by Dolores Kenning. And each chapter is on a specialized kind of grief, like when a marriage breaks up, abortion, how to talk to my children about death, death of a spouse, SIDS, it's almost everything except I think AIDS and what's the other, and incest is not in here either. But
can you spell her last name?
Kenning. And one of the things I'm doing now is training people in my work to do these kind of book study groups in their parishes, because at least then this is a way of naming it and getting on the table. And if people come around a book like this, that's the next best thing in a parish to having real specific groups. Yeah.
Do you think that God allows people to go through pain to break them down so that they'll eventually cry out for Him to?
Oh, you're asking me big theological questions that I'm not going to try to address, like where did evil come from and why did things happen. All I know is that we live in a broken, fallen world, and the nature is fallen as we are. And so when things happen, where did that little cartoon go I have here? This is the way I think we feel like we spend a lot of our lives, lying on our back saying, why? And I've long since tried to given up and trying to answer that. But I believe that God uses everything that happens to us for God's purposes. And our task is to be open with whatever comes our way to what this is teaching us and how God can use it. And that feels like a crucible many times. But
I mean, there's so many of these self-help books out there.
Mm-hmm.
You have to find a book for every problem you have.
Well, I'm not sure that all self-help books are the answer. I guess I'm sticking to the theme of Christian community. Like, I think, just a second, I think of my friend Joe and Shirley, whose daughter committed suicide. I think one of the things that they said so well, he said not long before we left, he said, I just don't need to know about stages. I'm not ready to hear or explore why Wendy did this. I just need lots of love. And I think for lots of situations, if we have that, if we feel a community of love, then we can start in other directions from there. But oftentimes people, see, one of my metaphors is to pick on the church, is that do you think everybody is as happy as they look at your coffee hour on Sunday mornings? I can guarantee you they're not. And over again, I hear stories of you know, where can I process this in the church? Or people look to the church to be a healing agent, and yet if we can't, we find it very difficult. And that's one of my issues about community, and that's why I like Elizabeth O'Connor's teachings, because we've been in small parishes and large parishes, and I don't care what size parish you're in, you have, it seems to me, to really be connected, you have to have a small group of people that you know care about you.
Can you say more about how to infuse faith into this process?
Yeah.
I've been in non-faith-based groups, and
right.
I have some feeling for how those go, but I and I can imagine things, but I'd like to hear more about how to infuse that.
For one thing, when the people in this group come together, they, in fact, I'm really glad you raised that. It's kind of leaping ahead, but that's okay. I talked to several women, happened to be over the weekend because of last week's sessions, who told me about grief groups they were in that said similar things to you, that if there isn't a spiritual sort of theme or connecting point, it doesn't go anywhere, because people's image of grief groups a lot is that you come and everybody just tells their sad story. I'm able to, I have the freedom to do that. And I say to people, I'm not teaching Christianity, but in the pamphlet that I've got designed here, one of the goals of the group says, one is to explore one's spirituality in the healing process. This happens to be different than any of the medical group, the clinical groups, the human development center, counseling centers. So it's openly stated that we'll deal with spirituality. And I think you have to state that either one way or the other, that you're going to do it or you're not going to do it. This is one form I've chosen to do it. The funeral home gives this book to each person that's in the group. So we agree on a chapter that we want to read. And this is very much from a Christian perspective, lots of stories. So the process that I use is basically this, is the go-around technique. Like I was mentioning, this women's group I was in, we would just start here and say, Betty, okay, how, you know, you're on. And in a real small informal friendship group, we didn't always have a question. We just would, it's your airspace. And then if Betty needed to take the whole 2 hours to process her stuff, that was fine, because the next week we knew that Nancy would get hers or whoever. But we had that go-around process, which I really believe in, because in every group there's someone that's quite shy and doesn't like to speak, and then there are those that would tend to verbally dominate. So it kind of equalizes that. So as a leader, sometimes I will take a theme from the book or a question that deals with a spirituality aspect and just say, maybe you could speak to that in the go-around or something like that. But one of the processes in spirituality, I think, is mutual sharing, which is by the go-around. And I share a little bit myself, depending on what level I'm comfortable at in the group I lead. Then we'll go through the book and just have an open-ended discussion. That will usually take at least the first hour. We have a coffee break. And then after the coffee break, what I do, and I didn't bring any of them today, but I'll just make an 8x10 handout. And sometimes it's a poem, sometimes it's scripture, sometimes it's a philosopher, something, input, and I try to really make it inclusive of all cultures. And that I pick for the theme of the book or the topic we're dealing on, and then that is how we deal with our spirituality. And then at the end, this is another thing I do. I don't think most of you, I haven't seen you at my other sessions, so, is I will, this is the centerpiece, and I teach by image. And this little placemat here is my metaphor for the focal or the center point of your life. And I've been using this all week, so I, you know, use that or something like that. But each week then I use greeting cards, candles, some little object, something very simple that is a way for people to focus. And those of you that have done some reading and education know there's a whole body of research that supports the fact that image and metaphor is a powerful evocative tool for your own story. And sometimes I'll make a go-around out of that. You know, this to me is an image of community. It's a greeting card. But a question could be, you know, when this week have you really felt you've experienced community? But it could be a go-around question. And this is another one that really goes along with tonight's theme, is our lives are shaped by those who love us. Now, if you put this on the centerpiece and someone is dealing with a lot of pain in their life by an abusive father, it's likely to evoke some pain about that issue. So that's another way I teach, is through symbol and metaphor. And then I will, like I opened with these quality kind of readings, or close with a little reading. So Is that answering your question a little bit about the process?
I think so. You have a go around, and then you have something that brings in spirituality as mm-hmm.
After the coffee break.
Sort of as an angle on it.
So. Go around the book, a handout on spirituality, and that's more than I usually get done in every session because I'm very much a process person, and I will drop the agenda for the process, which I think is a way of teaching spirituality too. And interestingly enough, most of the people that are in my groups happen to be church-going Christians. And it's interesting because it's come up in our group that somehow we're more free in that setting to talk about our spirituality than we are in our own churches and Bible study groups. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'd just like to back up what you're saying. I've had some problems in the past, and I don't think I would have been able to deal with them if I would just said, well, I'm just going to pray to the Lord to forgive me for what I might have done if I didn't have someone to relate it that I could trust.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I think that's so freeing to have community, whether it be a group of people, one person that you trust, or, you know, what level. I think, you know, that has to do with it too, what level you want to share.
Right,
and,
definitely.
You know, what type of trust you have in a group.
Right.
But I said, if I didn't have a friend to confide in, you know, my sins or, you know, my shortcomings, I don't think there would have been any healing there at all.
Thank you for sharing that. Any other comments? I think you're raising a good point about the level of trust in a group. What I've experienced in these groups is there's an enormous amount of trust that's built by this whole thing at the bottom here about every group that I lead is an 8-week commitment, 8 people, and 2 hours. Like, I'm even mildly frustrated teaching out here in only 1 hour because it's really, yeah, it's kind of short to really get into anything if you want to really explore something. And I'm amazed at how much trust builds with commitment to not go shopping or not to do other things. If you commit to that time and you can count on each other, there's a lot of trust there. And then confidentiality, of course. Interestingly enough, I'm taught in the prison system. And I still give workshops there. And when I go in there and teach classes, I have to spend a whole bunch of time just establishing trust for those people to even believe I'm not going to go run to their, supervising officer or something like that. So, and I think we all have scars from how we have maybe not been trusted, and we all have different levels of that. Yeah.
My sister works with the high school group at our church, and this is one of the things that she works with is the level of trust
uh-huh.
that you have in your peers.
Yeah.
And I think that's, you know, a marvelous thing to do
mm-hmm.
at that age.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to see the video? A little clip of the video. This, I'll quickly give you an introduction to these two people. And interesting enough, speaking of trust, these two people that you'll see in the video are named Val and Patty. And Val's husband died doing yard work at age 39. He just had a stroke and died and left her with 3 children to raise by herself. So one of her ongoing grief issues is single parenting, which is extremely difficult. And Patty, the dark-haired one in the video, lost her husband 6 years ago, probably 7 now, as he was driving down the freeway in New Jersey, and a drunk driver at 6:30 in the morning came crashing and landed on top of him and left her with an infant and a 4 and a 6-year-old. And then she moved back to Duluth, which is our hometown now. And Val and Patty have been soulmates, and they are two people that are really there for each other because their stories are so similar. They were widowed at such a young age, and they, as you will hear at the very beginning of the video, the first husband, or the first funeral they ever went to was their husband's at age in their 30s. So we'll see.
Thank you. And I sat down and talked to my wife, Drew Belgrum, one morning for a couple of hours.
We reduced the
lights. Decided that when she got her next group
the lights.
On, I probably
My name is Kathy Miller, and I also, I met Roger at the grade school, and she were living in me talking to me in a room. And so she asked if she could talk to me, and we did, and then she told me about the group and asked me if I could take part in it, and I did.
I'd like to ask each of you how you decided to, from your own personal lives and perspective, come to a group. Why did you feel the need to, desire to? You may both just each speak to that.
I think for me, it was a number of different events that led me to this, to bring back into focus for me. After my husband had died, I had been contacted by a friend who I worked with at UMD who had terminated or had left the U and had gone to St. Mary's to start his own grief support program and had become very well known with that. And so consequently, I was working with him and doing some volunteer work at the same time, and I put my kids through their program. But ironically, I would go to him probably twice a month, and people would ask me if I were joining the group, and the topic never came up as to why I would attend a group or that I needed to attend a group. And then when I talked with Norma Jean and found out that the groups that she was hoping to hold were going to be smaller, to me that felt safer. I liked the idea of being able to get into a group where maybe not so many people knew me, and it might be easier to open up and not have to safeguard all of my inner feelings. Even though I knew Patty was going to be there, I felt safe with Patty, because it seems like if you're in the same, or if you've been in the same circumstance, it's easier to communicate back and forth on it. And I like the small study group. So that's a value.
What are you, Patty?
I guess in part, my husband had died, it would have been 6 years when I met you, and I really kind of didn't feel like I really needed something like that. And on the other hand, I would have loved to have had it 6 years ago. I would have given anything for that, and it was not around. And having been involved in Madeline, just sort of always working with other people, but not really necessarily talking about your own issues. And I also know in a setting like that, there are things you can talk about that when I moved back here, I met new people and I didn't talk to them about what I was going through or what I had gone through. And so I kind of shot all that up. And it was kind of nice to be able to go through it again.
I think one thing too with groups is, having worked with different groups now, there's definitely different levels of healthy grieving. And I think it's real important to be able to find that level that you're in and enable you to go through that grieving process in a group setting. Some people come in and they have got such deeper emotions that they're dealing with that may not have even dealt with the death, but going back to childhood or something like that. And I think, you know, people in that area need to be with that group when they're comfortable with. And fortunately for me, I felt like I got into a group where everybody was kind of at the same stage that I was, or had been there just shortly, and that they were real helpful for me to say, well, this is where I was at, you know, and this is what happened to me. So I think that's important too, is to know where you're at in that grieving process.
Well, I also think you may very well have a group of friends that are wonderful that you can sit down and talk to, but I don't care how wonderful your friends are, you can't keep calling them up. You can't keep doing that forever. Whereas in a setting like this, that's what everybody is here for. And if you're down every week, it doesn't matter. And you can express that. Whereas it comes to the point with friends, you just can't keep going on like that. You have to start making some pretense that everything is fine. With a group like this, it's a different level. It's a different level of... you really can say what you want, say what you're feeling, and you can be totally honest.
One question I'd like to ask each of you is about the timing issue in terms of when you entered this particular group, in terms of how long it was after you lost your husband. And I'll bet you said you were doing anything to have no at the time it happened. Can you make just comments you'd like to make about the timing, when it was for yourself, when you came in this group, how long the baby shut me by?
Again, I think it's all individual feelings and where you're at. I guess when Jim died, I had never experienced any kind of death before at all. My grandmother, who I was probably 4 or 5 years old, when she passed away, and that was, it was almost an assumed type thing, you know, it was, well, grandma was old and it was time and that kind of thing. Whereas a sudden death with Jim, I mean, I've never been around anything like that, and I needed to be able to process. My way of processing is I had to grab books. I read books. I mean, what is grieving? What am I supposed to go through? And after I was able to understand this is a normal type setting, this is normal feelings for me, this is normal for my kids to be going through, then it was okay to allow myself to accept that and to be able to go into a group and say, I understand that this is okay, but it still hurts a lot. And I think the other thing for the group settings is it allowed me to come in and feel comfortable with crying if I needed to cry. I did feel that I could do that at home with the kids around, or who was going to come to the door and find me in tears, or who was going to call me on the phone and I couldn't talk on the phone. So I guarded myself, whereas the group allowed me to let go.
I guess I would like to have had my way simply because I, when my husband died, my kids were really young, infants and 4 and 6, and I never really allowed myself the time to grieve. I mean, you do, but I mean, I would wake up in the morning, I remember thinking, I can't believe, you know, it was just, it all sort of hit me again. But I immediately had to get kids ready for school, and by the time Evie rolled around and the kids were in bed, I was too tired. I mean, I couldn't have cried if I wanted to. I was just so tired and so glad to have the kids in bed. And it would have been really nice to have had something like this to come to deal with it, ask that, you know, when you come home from open house that first time and you felt terrible because you looked around and they're all two-parent families and you were the only one, at least you thought you were. And so you took that home and you just sat with it and talked to my parents about it. But I mean, it would have been nice to have had someone to share that with. I didn't.
Would you both recommend this kind of experience for most people who have immediate loss? It would be a good time to do it.
Yes.
So,
yes. Even though you feel that maybe you're not ready for it, that comfort level will allow you to feel okay with it. I think it goes, you can get work it through faster.
You know, I had the same experience as you. This was really the first step that I dealt with. And I didn't know any of the widows, young widows, I mean, not that they have, but that would have been, I was the only one I knew that was young and had children and no husband. And I, not that the story has to be the same for everyone in the group, but I mean, at least everybody in the group understands. There's a different level of understanding.
How about the children's issues? I know each of you was left when your husband died with 3 grandchildren. I think you'd like to share about how the group helped you deal with the ongoing issues you have to deal with in terms of children.
I think for me it was just being able to voice my frustrations of having to deal with it every day. I mean, with 3 kids, the ages that my kids were 6, 8, and 10, the time that Jim died. And each one of them was so different. And, you know, coming to the realization that I had to allow myself to let them grieve in their own way. You know, 2 of the kids were real open about it. They continue to want to talk about their dad. Then there's a 3rd one who doesn't want to say or do anything that is in reference to their dad. Every once in a while, the middle one will come up with a comment. But I think having being able to be in a group where Patty had already gone through it, she could say, you know, it's normal for kids to do that kind of thing. And, you know, just kind of follow it through and track it more than anything. And the grief support program that my kids went through, I still don't know exactly what they did each session, and I probably never will, and they would come home and say, that's dumb, I don't want to do it. But each week that they went, I could see that it had helped in one way or another. So I think that, you know, I think that was one of my better things that I did too, is insist that they go to a program for kids.
I guess it hadn't been so long after, I don't know that it necessarily helped me that much with my children, because we had already dealt with a lot. But in looking back, I would have, there again, I would have loved to have had it, because I didn't know what I was going through, what they were going through, what was normal. And my children also went through the grief support group, but then, for them it wasn't until 2 years after, because it wasn't around for young children, so we all kind of, it all came after. But I think it would have been good for them right away, and I think it would have been good for me in dealing with them right away.
And I think the support, you know, I could come to the group and say, you know, Jeff is going through this, or Jane is going through this, and not that the group could give you specific ideas or specific things to do, they were there to support what you decided to do. Yeah. You know, and you don't have that at home. There's no one there at home to say you're doing the right thing, or, you know, to call your husband.
We'll just stop here and do a time. It goes on for another half an hour, but, any reactions you'd like to make to the, just what you heard in the tape? Yeah.
I can't speak for other people, but it seems like in these group situations, if they keep renewing all this pain, it's sort of like a rubbing of an open wound all the time. You know, wouldn't they want to try to put it behind them a little bit? You get a good cry out and forget it.
Well,
not forget it, but sort of learn to live with it without constantly,
Well, I think if you heard what they were saying, they weren't saying that they bring it out to rehash it. They say, I don't know if this is normal. I didn't know anybody else that was in the situation. So part of the beauty of being in a group is to bring your experience to speech and have other people go, oh yeah, that's exactly what happened to me, or well, what you might try is, it's tremendously therapeutic. And people do not dwell on it or bring it up and hash it over any more than, I mean, if they say something, it's because they want help with it. It's not because they're wanting to nurse it and never get over it. I mean, do you see what I mean, the difference?
When somebody dies, isn't it, it's not like a divorce where the people are still existing. Isn't something like that just a matter of time?
Yes, it is definitely a matter of time. But in the meantime, in the healing process, it's tremendously painful, and people feel very isolated and alone. And especially when you're left with children and you're a single parent, and a sudden death, there's just a whole host of issues that we need help with. Yeah. Go ahead.
I think there are a lot of myths in this too, and one is that time heals.
Yes.
Time will make it be further apart, but
yes,
time does not heal, and so you need this help and process.
Exactly.
There are lots of myths, and there's lots of things church people say. Well,
right.
Your church will, you're a good Christian, so yeah, you will be strong. And doing what they're doing is considered weak, and it's really just the opposite.
Exactly.
But there are a lot of myths that we,
yes,
need to dispel, and I think groups do that.
Yes, they do.
And that it was the will of God.
Yes.
Well, the God you need at that moment is a loving,
yes,
merciful,
yeah,
God that's suffering with you that this happened, not,
yeah,
a God that,
right,
did it.
Val, the one in the pink, said that one of the ways, you know, well-meaning people, but say things that really are stoppers, is that what happened to her after she, and they happened to go to the same church, go to First Methodist Church. She'd come to church, and this was not long after Jim had died, and people would say, Val, you look just great. And it was almost like saying, and don't tell me that you're not, and don't tell me any more about it. And she, for her, that was a stopper. And Patty married a man in their second marriage now, whose wife was murdered on the North Shore and left him with three little children. And so both of them lost their first spouses to tragedy, just sudden loss. And she'd say, you know, Tom would come to church, and people didn't seem to be, didn't talk to him. It's always that. People didn't talk to him about it, and say, how are you doing after a certain amount of months? And she says, you know, what do they need? Do they need to see him crawling on the sidewalk to believe that how devastated he is after this murder? So, and then all the myths of, oh, aren't they strong? And how many times have you said it yourself or heard, oh, they must be doing so well, or they must be over it? And that's why I use this, because we grieve to the depth we have loved. And if you have loved someone, a child, a very good friend, a spouse, these people in my family, you know, they certainly haven't gone away. They're in another world. But I was telling the group last week that I also teach family spirituality classes and teach people how to talk about your life story through symbol and metaphor. And all the way out here, we happened on one jaunt of the trip to get into telling family stories. And see, my three children don't even know my brother and my dad. So part of the reason I have this on my dining room table is because it's symbolic of the five people I grew up with. And it's an invitation into talking about the people that you have loved. But there are, thank you for bringing that up, a tremendous amount of myths. And we in the church are guilty of all of them. Did you want to say something?
Well, just a couple of things. I think in regard to, you know, having a good crying and, you know, putting it behind you, I do think that's what a lot of people tend to do, because it's easier for them to just, in some ways, to just bury that whole thing with the busyness of life and keep busy and not really ever get back in touch with those feelings. But then, I just really believe that what we heard in the tape in regard to this one little comment, for instance, about going to a PTA meeting and here are all the mothers and fathers and how isolated and kind of, you know, sad that was for her, and if she, you know, had a group that she could have shared that feeling with, that's going to complete that feeling for her, whereas it otherwise, I think, will keep coming up in different ways.
Exactly.
My father died in March, and I thought, you know, it was a real total experience for me, because I was with him when he drew his last breath, and, you know, I kept saying, this is just a real celebration for me. He'd gone to join my mother, and I felt really complete. And yet I keep having, you know, things that just shock me that will come up at different times. And fortunately, you know, I have a husband who I can really share those deep feelings with, because I think there's a support group.
Yes.
And that really, and that really helps a lot.
That's another good point about grief, that will be jarred or jogged by our sensory things, seeing something, being sitting somewhere, and it'll overtake you at the least expected time. And that's another reason to have a group.
After the 8 sessions, is that it kind of for these groups, or do they continue without you?
No, that's another story that's been really fun. After the 8 sessions, what's happened every time is that we really are just barely getting going, and then we contract for another 8 weeks verbally to hang in there. And then after those 6, this has been true of each of the 4 groups now, this is a new program I've just started, then after the 8 weeks, they go for once a month and meet just to keep in touch. One group just goes out for lunch and it's not a group. The other group, the first group that started last fall, is one I don't want to let go of myself, because these two are in several other, they become very good friends of mine. And we do the go around for those 2 hours. And now, after meeting for almost a year, we have got so much that we can draw upon, because we really are getting to know each other quite well. So it just deepens and grows. And now we're giving the baby shower for one of the women who's just had a baby. And that's what I mean by ongoing community. It just keeps going. And that'll be in the sessions at the end of the week. But that's why I believe in this process so much, because once you come together in meaningful community, there is so much life generated from it that new communities spring up, even if those people don't stick together for 3 years or whatever. So, and then we do retreats. I'm from Minnesota, and some of you that may know Minnesota may know of the ARC Retreat Center near Cambridge, Minnesota. And it's kind of like a little Holden, actually. And we go there for an overnight retreat and are led by another facilitator other than myself, which is another really powerful bonding experience.
But are you a part of all these groups throughout until they...
I do the first 8 weeks, and then, so far I've been able to do the first 16 weeks, but I don't stick with them except the one I don't want to give up myself. But, yeah.
I don't know, my experience in groups, I think quality, for one thing, maybe has a little bit to do with it, as far as the level that you can maybe get into it. I think it depends on a level. If it's like a really deep level, I think you have to confine maybe in someone that's more of your spiritual brother.
Right.
My question is, do you think that sometimes maybe it's just a dumping session? where just people are dumping out their pain, and it can maybe turn into something negative than it is positive after a while.
I'm sure it could be that way. That has not been my experience at all, however. What I have experienced in group, because I think spirituality is a bedrock, is that it's anything but a dumping ground. It is like Patty said, it's a safe place, because even if you've got really good friends, you just don't keep calling very many of them on a really blue day, like 2 years into your grief. I mean, unless you've got a really, like my sister is one person, I actually have several people in my life I could do that with, but it would have to be on a right day in a given day. But not very many of us have people that would want to keep hearing how we really are if it's not so good, you know. But no, it is not a dumping ground, because I believe that Christian community is transformative, because love is there, and it's a grace, actually, because it's okay if you're depressed still, or if you're stuck in this place. It's okay, and people receive you in love. Yeah.
I think the facilitation in a group has a great deal to do with whether that happens.
I agree with you.
You're the guide. And I also think if it's a spiritually based group, you know, people tend to really get into recognizing that, you know, they can let some of these things go into the Lord's hands, and that maybe they walk away discovering how they can deal with that issue, whatever it might be, a little differently.
Exactly. And to facilitate spirituality to be integrated. A woman was telling me about a group that was held in a church, and because it was held in a church, but the facilitator was not comfortable with spirituality, and so what they did was just have this grief group, and then on session six called in the minister to deal with spirituality. Well, no. that's kind of saying that it's not integrated then. Yeah.
Aren't people maybe looking for a little feedback from what they say, so that they can better understand their problems? So
yes, there is a lot of feedback in the group process.
How many men show up for this?
We've only had two, not many. Part of it's because most of my groups are in the daytime, although I'm starting an evening group now. But culturally, most men just don't give themselves permission to do this, and that's unfortunate. The one man I have that his daughter committed suicide has become a role model in our community, because he's now talking to other men and even men's groups about it. And his wife said, and he said to me too, he says, I never thought I'd come to something like this. I just didn't think I needed it. But he's so desperate out of his pain that he's been able to come, and he just loves it.